Welcome to the Zephyr Hills Alliance Church podcast, where two pastors process the context of church and the practice of discipleship. I'm Pastor Christian, and joining me as always is Pastor Ted.
Hi, everyone.
Our church holds an annual missions conference where we hear about how God is using the Christian Missionary Alliance all across the globe. This year, Randy and Alicia Clark joined us for our conference, and we invited them on the podcast to talk about their ministry and their call into missions. Here's that conversation for episode 16 of the Zach. Thank you for joining us. Well, we're so excited today to have Randy and Alicia Clark with us. They are IWs on the field with the Alliance, and I'm going to let them tell you a little bit about themselves.
Yeah, so we have served in Uruguay in South America. It's way down south underneath Brazil, just east of Argentina. And our first term was from 2001 to 2006. Then we had a gap because I pastored back in the U.S. in Florida. And then we went, God called us to go back and serve a second term there. So we're just back from the field about less than 6 months ago.
Hi, I'm Alicia Clark, and we just came back in September. Uruguay, which is a very atheistic country, they just don't believe that church is relevant or worth going to. And so we are very thankful that we were able to go two times.
Awesome. I wonder if to begin, you could tell us the story of how you were called to the field and how you wound up there.
That happened back when we first became believers. Within 3 weeks, we went to our pastor, who was a former missionary for four terms in Cambodia, wanted to take us to what was called a missions and review. And it was at that time, NIAC college students singing and sharing the gospel and trying to inspire people for God to call them to missions. And so we went to this.
I was so moved by the drama, the music, the whatever it takes, Lord, I'll do it, whatever it takes. And so I was down the aisle when they had that call, but I didn't know what to do when you get down the aisle. I thought maybe we had to get on the bus with them and take off.
You have to realize we were brand new Christians, like 3 weeks. We didn't know anything, you know, having been raised Catholic for me, Jewish for Alicia. And now this whole thing in being Christians and going to a Christian church, we're like, we don't know what's going on.
Just for context, you guys were about how old when this was happening?
I was 26. Randy was 28. And so now I'm ready to go and follow them and go wherever God wanted us to go to share the hope, the love of Jesus. When we got down to the altar, I didn't know what I was supposed to do. And I said, hey, I want to go. And then I turned around and Randy had come down too. So I'm like, Randy, you're going to go with me. Awesome.
So how many years was it before from that point on? Did you go? You went to ATS?
Right. I began to feel this call. Like, I need to go to seminary. I need to learn because we had never gone to Bible college. We had never even taken a Bible course. So I'm like, huh, I need more information. I need to study this, you know, more full time. So I really felt that need to go to seminary since we already had degrees, undergrad degrees. So that was about 5 years before I went to Alliance Theological Seminary, and Alicia too. She took classes there as well. We had to move to New York and to do that. And that took 3 years to get my master's.
We were still on the trajectory to go to the mission field. But when we arrived at Alliance Theological Seminary in 1987, 5 years after that call, the man from the candidacy office in the national office met with us and we're like, where are we going to go? So excited. We've left everything to go to the mission field, study. And he said, wait a minute. How old are you? I'm 31. Randy's 33. And you've adopted a child? Yes, we adopted an older child. We felt the Lord calling us to adopt an older child. Well, then I'm going to have to tell you, you can't go to the mission field. I'm like, what? We feel called. And he goes, okay, but here's the deal. You have 3 years of seminary, and then you have to do at least 2 years of a home service where you work in a church and do ministry. So basically, you're too old, and you have a kid that would end up causing difficulties. So no, you can't go.
So super encouraging.
Yeah. So when the door seemed like it was slammed, what did you do?
We became, as we like to say, missionaries to the U.S. So we were involved in a church planting movement in the Alliance at that time called 1,000 More by 94.
That's
right. You might remember that.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to live in Colorado. I loved that state from when I was a kid, and we would travel through there. There was a city in western Colorado, Grand Junction, Colorado, which is only like 20 miles from Utah. So it's all the way over on the other side of the Rockies in high desert country, completely different, you know, geology and climate there. And that's where we landed in 1990. There was no group. We didn't know anybody. It's just that the Alliance had kind of targeted that city.
It was so important that we had that confirmation because it was hard work. And we would say to each other, no, God sent us here and confirmed this was it, because it took many years for it to be established and have a core group. We both had to work. It was bivocational. But finally, after 10 years, we wrote to the Alliance. We're not any younger. We really feel this call to go to the mission field. Is there any room in the Alliance for us? And that's when the door opened finally to go to Uruguay.
So we were in planting that church for 11 years or so, and we were able to purchase property. The building was built. I preached two times and we left.
What made you choose Uruguay? Like, what was the...
So I'm a Jew who believes in Jesus as Messiah, and Randy's Catholic background. The Uruguayan population that was unreached was that upper middle class population right in the capital city of Montevideo. And they saw us as a good fit for that. That's as true. Far as also our ages fit the population in Uruguay. Yeah.
So when you went the first time, what was different than from being in the U.S. for 11 years of ministry or more?
Well, we went to Uruguay with the idea that we would be living in the capital city to do church planting as well.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Right.
And but for the first 18 months, we lived up in the interior of the country, actually on the border with Brazil, because Uruguay is tucked right underneath Brazil and east of Argentina. And it's actually a buffer state the way it was created back in history. So we ended up initially helping with an existing church, becoming great friends with the pastor and the leadership of that church. And Alicia ended up substitute teaching and an English, was it bilingual?
It was a bilingual. I did the morning English session. We didn't find it challenging. It was like, this is perfect. The only thing was challenging was that we told the National Church we want to go to Montevideo. And they're like, no, we want you to teach in the Bible Institute, which is up in Rivera. So there was that little tension there, but we obeyed. And we helped with the Bible school, and we did extension classes in other cities.
Through all of these different contacts and other contacts, we started a small group in our apartment in Montevideo. And instead of calling it a Bible study, because people would not be interested in a Bible study, we called it a reflection group. And the idea was to gather the group and reflect on, and in our case, reflect on a current topic. I would go and get the Sunday paper, because we did this on Sunday mornings, this little reflection group of six, sometimes eight people. And I would get the Sunday paper and I would look through there and I would find a topic of interest that they would be interested in talking about. And so that would be, we would reflect on that and we would have food and coffee and lunch and talk about this topic. And then eventually, maybe the second or third time, I'd say, well, I want to ask you, with this topic, the Bible says this about this particular topic. And then I would ask them what they thought about that. And that was a way to kind of segue into not making it a Bible study, but just to show what is God's perspective.
He was great at it. I would just marvel. And the other thing, of course, is we wanted to reach the Jewish population. So how does that work? Okay, so then in my Pilates class, I'd met Rosine. She's Jewish. We hit it off, become friends. She invites us over and I meet Alicia. And that's my name, but it's a very common name. So I meet Alicia and we're talking about how I have faith in Yeshua, in Jesus. And she goes, you know who would like to know you better and who I would is my sister. She talks like you. And then I had to work up the courage to call Diana. And I called her on her birthday. And we were talking about how we're both Jewish. She invited her Jewish cousin, her Jewish daughter. And so it was now the Jewish community that we were trying to reach. And Rosine's husband also, he loved us. So we got to go to the synagogue. And then we went vacations with them in Punta del Este. It was a wonderful relationship.
One of the things that we were able to do with this group is have a Messianic Passover Seder. I knew that's where she was going. So we've done Messianic Passover Seders many times before here in the U.S. at our church. And so we invited them. And of course, we told them it was going to be Messianic. So they were interested in that. Like, what does this mean? And so we did a Passover Seder in our home and explaining the three matzahs. And now you remove the middle matzah, break it. This is what Jesus did. He broke it and said, this is my body broken for you.
So we explained
our friend.
In our understanding, the three in one represent the Trinity, Father, Son, and Spirit. And it's the middle one you pull out and break. And that's what Jesus did. It's that pointing to him, pointing to him. 15 years later, we go for our second term. And many remembered. I remember that Seder. I remember you said the middle matzah was the Son. So in this second term, we left the field in 2006. From 2006 to 2007, I finished my master's in counseling in Colorado. We were prepared to go back in 2008, but it was blocked, that no from God. And so then we chose to pastor in Florida. Here we are in Florida now. For 12 years, I finished all the requirements to get licensed here in Florida. And we also took in my mom, who had Alzheimer's. So that was in God's plan.
And even in the time of your waiting, between the first time and that, then the second time, God was still using you both tremendously in South Florida. That's how we met originally. And there was fruit from your ministry. And it's amazing how God works when we are faithful and we're available. And he just works through you to shine. So here's a question. Is Grand Junction still operating?
Yes. So they're only on their third pastor after 35 years.
Wow. That's
so very stable.
Stable.
When we left, it was a group of about 120, of which over half were kids under 18.
That
was a lot of kids.
Yeah.
And that church now, as far as we understand, is about 450.
That's great.
You know, but the impact, more than the numbers, is just that the impact on the people and the stability of pastoral leadership, they've planted another church.
Did you tell me earlier you guys were the first grandparents who were allowed to be missionaries with the Alliance?
So when we wrote them that we're not any younger, and remember, for all those years, you had to be 32 or under. But here we're 45 and 47 years old. The church is established. And this was at the 10-year mark, which we had committed to. And we write to the Alliance and say, we are still open. We feel we're still called. Is there any place on the mission field for us? And we were thinking a one-year or a two-year assignment, you know? And we met with them. They decided, you are experienced church planters. This fit of Uruguay, Jewish and Catholic background, your career missionaries, we're going to send you. And we also, as a matter of fact, got four other letters from couples in their 40s. And so we think God is moving and breaking down that barrier, that age barrier, all in the year 2000, 2001. We were the first missionaries that were sent out on their first term that were grandparents.
Congratulations. That's
in the
great.
Alliance.
So you guys had a reflection group the second time around too when you were pastoring. If we go back to that first term, you were in Montevideo and you were building relationships, working at the school, bringing in like the reflection group. What was the like result of that? Did that continue? Or
so when we couldn't go back, people who were left on the field continued with that reflection group. Some of it fell off, you know, but they continued those relationships with the English Institute leaders and the book club. We got a call while in this gap while we were here in Florida from the field director, the new field director, who called and said, hey, I want you to know the people here still love you. We're reaping still the harvest from your fruit that you left. So we're just so thankful. And I just felt I needed to call you and let you know that. And you're welcome to come back.
It's also in that gap between the first term and the second term, which was about 15 years. Of course, the Alliance sent other IWs down to Montevideo. So younger families with lots of kids. And like Alicia said, they started reflection groups as well, or Bible study groups, whatever was working. And they were able to begin actually having Sunday services. Then they were able to purchase some property. They were in the process of purchasing a building when we arrived for our second term in 2021. And so a lot of the approach that we took from the first term was continued on right during that gap. So a church has been planted by the IW team. It's in another part of Montevideo, about 30 minutes away from the main church in the urban area, of which when we arrived, we thought we were going to help with the church plant. This other team of IWs had started. We were down there to help them and maybe start another church. But the National Alliance of Uruguay said, oh, Randy and Alicia are coming back down. Well, that pastor in this urban church wants to retire. We're going to let him retire, and we're going to install Randy and Alicia as the new pastors. Not something we were anticipating, but once again, God has his ways. We make our plans, but God orders our steps. We were just faithful to that and obedient to that to say that, well, this must be what God has for us here and why he moved us and called us to go back. Really, we never lost that calling, but the opportunity was available for us to go back, and this is what he had in mind, to rejuvenate that older church of a small congregation of a core group of 12, 15 older people, which the Lord just blessed the ministry, not only with us, but another Puerto Rican couple.
You know, what I hear in your story, I hear in so many stories from missionaries of saying yes to a call and then being redirected, you know, saying yes and then, but wait, we thought it was going to be this and then it's that. And what you end up having to do is submit again to God's direction. You think, oh, we said yes one time and we're covered. But actually, there's always this challenge of, okay, but actually it's not here, it's over there. Or it's not with this person, it's that person, or it's this type of ministry. Or it's not right now, it's 10 years from now. And so you have to like continually be saying yes. And you use that word obedience, Randy, which is just so key to the life of the disciple, I think, because that's what you're doing. You say yes, but then you have to keep saying yes because he keeps redirecting. You know, almost every missionary story that I've heard, we thought it was going to be this, it ended up being this. And of course, it was God's plan, and we can see that in, you know, later, usually, and after the fact, we can see it. You know, you have to continually be obedient. It's not just one yes, you know.
Yeah, I think that's true in ministry as a servant. You're challenged, even in the United States. I mean, remember, the opportunity to come to Zephyr Hills was on my plate. I said, Lord, do you want me to go? And the Lord says, well, you know, what would keep you staying? Well, I got this house. I'll never have another house. You know, and the Lord says, are you willing to serve me? And that's what I glean from you guys sharing is how faithful you were to the Lord's leading and open to the Lord saying, you thought it was going to be this, but it's really this. And you were saying, yes, Lord, even in the midst of that. And that can be unsettling and hard.
The Lord did the work through us. And so what we share with you in our story is really to give glory to God. And yes, we were involved in that ministry, and God did work through us, and we were obedient. But the glory goes to God for the rejuvenation of that church in Montevideo that we were pastoring and planting the church in Grand Junction, which was difficult many, many years, and we were both working. But God bless because obedience and being flexible, listening to the Spirit.
The very first song that I learned was at that Missions in Review was whatever it takes to draw closer to you, Lord, that's what I'll be willing to do. And that struck a chord. Yeah, that's it. That's me. Whatever it takes to draw closer to you. So if it means leaving the house we just bought and getting on the bus with you to go to the mission field, that's what I'll do. I didn't understand the process then, but or the length of time it would take. But the whatever it takes has always been right there in my heart. Let's make the best of it. Adapt to it. Find out. Let's see what God has in mind.
It was worth it because of the joy that we both feel in looking back at our ministry. And, you know, there was a lot of frustration. There was a lot of failures, you know, heartaches, pain, emotional pain, But all of that, the scriptures say that our ministry is not just, you know, it's all joyful and, you know, great things are happening, but it's also the sufferings that we walk with Jesus through our sufferings. He walks with us through our sufferings. And through that, our character is built, perseverance is built in us, and all of those good qualities, spiritual qualities to make the ministry fruitful.
Yeah, the Apostle Paul says, I'm pressed, you know, but not crushed.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And James says, count it all joy when you face various trials.
Yes.
And so forth. So God's doing that good work in you. He's going to complete that good work, and he's not done with you. That's the good news. Yeah. You'll keep shining for him.
I wonder if you could tell us where you see God moving and what are the needs, you know, on the field that you guys served in.
Well, there's several needs. Now there's only one IW couple. And so we need another IW couple there helping out that church to stay firm and grow and mentor this new couple who are doing their practicum. And, you know, it's difficult in that transition. So we're hoping that church grows and be strong because it's right in the urban center. It has the possibility of being a strong sending church. Many alliance fields in Latin America are already self-sustaining. They don't need IWs because they've raised up leaders. They've raised up seminaries. They're sending actual couples to the mission field. And Uruguay is so behind. And so that's the other thing that they're trying to do, strengthen that mission focus. There's more IWs needed for that church and for the area that our apartment was, that Jewish area. They want to plant a church right there. So we really need more people there. And this team is so good. They'll do anything to reach people. It's such a secular, atheistic country where it's just looked down upon if you're a Christian. You know, what? Those are for the ignorant, for the gullible. That's why we need more people who live the Christian life and live Jesus and share Jesus with them.
So you'd see the role of IWs there principally being that demonstrating the Christian life, and by doing that, strengthening the believers and growing the church so that hopefully it can, in your words, like catch up with the rest of these Latin American countries that are where the church is stronger and they're already sending missionaries. So developing that missional mindset. But at this stage, it's really more about changing culture around church and strengthening, you know, existing church and believers.
Mm-hmm. Building relationships. We spend a lot of time, the whole team spends a lot of time practicing hospitality, building relationships. Mm-hmm. And then eventually people ask, you know, you guys are so different. I mean, we all hear that comment. And why is that? So that's when, you know, we're able to say, well, that's Jesus in us. You know, just very simply and plainly say, you know, Jesus has transformed us and we're just sharing that with you. So that process is slow because you have to build that trust relationship, so to speak. And, you know, it's not an agenda. It's like you just love people and continue to walk with them. You're present with them. We talk about a ministry of presence with people, saying yes if they invite us to something, being there with them.
We throw that net wide and we don't know what God is already working in people's lives. And we just put our little seeds into the ground along with earlier seeds and pray expectantly, pray that God would water and grow those seeds. And we just pray that all those seeds would eventually grow and bear fruit into a harvest. And that's what we're
in order to have a ministry of presence or a ministry of hospitality, you have to go. You have to say yes to go. And there's still a need for people to go, right? And to be there to do those ministries. And God receives the glory as we're obedient. Thanks for joining us on the Zephyr Hills Alliance Church podcast. We're glad you're here. And we want to invite you to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts for this show, as well as our daily devotionals and other podcasts we make. All of our content is produced in-house by the ZAC Media team. If you want to connect with us further, find us on Facebook and visit our website, zaccma.org.